the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and hour three upon us. Steve Haskin, who we had to shift away from Thursday to Friday because there's too much to talk about, and so I wanted to get Steve in, and yesterday we got knocked off, so here we are. And Steve, good morning.
Good morning. All days are the same to me, so it doesn't matter.
you basically were living pandemic lifestyle even before pandemic.
Yeah, nothing's changed for me. In fact, in many ways, it's better. This gives me an excuse to stay home.
Exactly. You don't have to justify not leaving. That's not true. You go to see the baby. You go up to Wallingford, and you go to Connecticut and Saratoga. You travel more than you let on. You know, before we dive in to the racing recaps, one thing about yesterday that it doesn't really matter that it's today, but one thing I would have brought up with you yesterday that, of course, you saw on Facebook, and I put it on Twitter every year on February 11th. We remind all of his friends and everybody that admired his work of Mick's birthday. Michael J. Martin would have been 63 yesterday.
Yeah, still miss him. Still think of the old days. Somebody had mentioned me in your thing, so I sent them the link to my column I wrote about all my adventures with Mike over the years. We've had some dandies, I'll tell you.
Well,
so much so that it filled an entire column. But he was a hell of a photographer. Fun guy to be around. Some people didn't appreciate him. You know, he had his run-ins with some people, which was unfortunate what they did to him at the end of his career, which just left him broken, where he couldn't get into Churchill to cover the Derby. I mean, it's just snowballed. It started with Keeneland, with the person in publicity, and they called Churchill. Churchill banned him. And then they contacted Pimlico. Pimlico banned him. Then Naira banned him. He couldn't cover the Triple Crown. Couldn't even cover the Travers at the end of the year. Couldn't get into Saratoga. I mean, it was really sad. This is the person who was the top of his profession, best photographer you'll want to see, and they really did it in for him. And he was never the same. He was, you know, he was. You know, not being able to photograph for us. I remember. I think it was the year when they had when Mind That Bird, I believe, was in the Derby, and he was at Saratoga, and Mike tried to get in, and he tried to get in the backstretch. He managed to get a groom's ID, and they found out about him, and then they banned him completely from the backstretch. And he was trying to sneak in to get photos, and he wound up having to hang out at the head of the stretch, you know, just with everybody else, just trying to get a shot here and there. I mean, it was just very, very sad, considering how high he was, you know, in his profession. I think most people, you know, considered him the best.
Yeah, agreed. He had, you know, had that. That nose for news was always in the was always turning up in the right spot for the right shots.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the reasons why I loved hanging around with him. I mean, every place we went to, something broke. There was something newsworthy broke. He always knew exactly where to go, and you know, our trips to the airports to see all these horses come in. I mean, this is some great stories with Barbaro and Fusaichi Pegasus, and of course the famous Smarty Jones story. I mean, yeah, there's just so many of them. But that was Mike. Wherever he went, something happened. And he was the only photographer, by the way, where, you know, a trainer was being interviewed by like 20 reporters. And Mike would you know, he'd be standing there with his camera and everything, and he'd stay, and he'd be asking more questions than the reporters. And I don't think a lot of the guys appreciated that. Could he just be conducting his own private interview with all these guys?
He was a live wire, and
yeah, so I mean, I never thought he'd ever settle down. So the greatest thing that ever happened to him was, you know, meeting Joanne Noor at the airport when he was there and for the Breeders' Cup horses, and Desert Stormer was coming in, and Joanne was at the airport, and they met, and she asked him to take pictures of Desert Stormer, and he did, and you know, and they wound up living together for a long time, and he completely changed his ways, and he had ways. one thing which I normally never admit, but one year at the Breeders' Cup, when it was at Churchill Downs, Ed Fontaine convinced me and a couple of other guys to come with him to his favorite strip club, and I had never been to one, and so me and a couple of reporters from Canada and everything, so we said, all right, you know, we'll go in there, you know, just for the heck of it. And, you know, Mike went in. And, you know, all these girls up there, I mean, they're all gorgeous girls. I mean, we walked in there, and within 3 seconds, every single girl, you know, dancer in there was hovering around Mike. It was like unbelievable. I mean, he attracted them like, you know, like... like honey, it's a bear. I mean, it's just, it was incredible. And these are all these professional, you know, they couldn't care about any other clients in there. You know, everybody just ran right over. All these beautiful women just ran over to Mike.
He
had a magnetism, I'll say
yes,
that.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. No doubt about it. Well, every year that I send that out on Twitter and Facebook, there's a huge reaction. I mean, countless friends. And what's interesting is there's so many from so many walks of life, and you know, particularly the farms. You see a lot of the breeding farms and personnel. That remember him from, you know, doing glamour work for catalogs and websites and whatnot. Really miss.
People don't realize, you know, through his connections with Bob McNair, he was the official photographer for the Houston Texans when they came into the league. So he would go, you know, photograph all of their games. I tell you, one time during the Smarty Jones thing, I mean, he got into to go into. Whatever the Philly stadium name is, but John Service was throwing out the first pitch, and he went and he got in and he got me in, and we went in, and you know, here we are on the field before the game, and I'm warming up John Service on the sidelines, and all, you know, the fans are in there gathered by the dugout and everything, and I'm playing catch with John Service to warm up his arm. And I'm standing on the first baseline, and he's by the dugout, and we're just throwing a ball back and forth so we could limber up. And then all the Phillies come up out of the clubhouse, Jim Tomei, and you know, they're all going over to John Service, and you know, I mean, I'm staying there with all the whole Philadelphia team, and I'm on the field, and you know, it's all because of Mike. And so he took his photographs, and then they were playing the Mets. And I remember the Mets got up at the top of the first, and Mike said, "All right, let's go." All right, so we never even watched the game, but it was just fun. It was just fun being there for that,
no doubt.
And you know, it was all because of him, because he was everywhere.
Well, the Smarty story that you've told many times, it makes everybody laugh, and it's
the car trip.
The first time you told it is the greatest.
Yeah, I even have it's even a chapter in my book, Tales from the Triple Crown. I mean, it's just a, and it's in that column that I wrote. In fact, the column, I really went into, you know, a lot of detail on it. But it was like one of the most craziest, surreal
events. It's a fun story.
Ever.
Steve, let's dive in. We got about 15 minutes to talk about four things, and really three and a half. Your thoughts about the Withers and Sam Davis winners last week.
Well, Sam Davis didn't do much for me, and I knew the speed ratings would come back slow, and they all did. I mean, it was really slow. I mean, only, look, I don't know, you know, Candyman Rocket, he could turn out to be a good horse because he was stretching out, you know, from six furlongs to two turns. So, you know, it was excusable that he would get tired. But he you could see him really shortening stride in the stretch. And the horse that he had put away started coming back at him, and he was getting tired too, and he was coming off a sprint. Both of them Bill Mott horses at Nova Regs. And then the third horse, Hidden Stash, was closing ground, but he was on his wrong lead the whole length of the stretch, and he was right there. And then, you know, Pletcher's horse, who, you know, I had ranked high, Known Agenda. I mean, for some reason, this is a horse with great tactical speed who beat Greatest Honor at going a mile and eighth, and he's like 15 lengths off the pace. And I'm saying, what, you know, what is this all about? And he's just doing nothing. And then finally, it's like the eighth ball, he decided to run, and he wound up, he got beat at, you know, a photo for fourth in the race, probably partially because the closing fractions were so slow, but he just fell asleep in the race. And they're going to put blinkers on him, so we'll see what happens there. But, I mean, all those speed figures didn't come out very strong. On the other hand, I really, really liked the Withers. I thought risk-taking. I watched his maiden race closely, and I just liked what I saw. It was something about the horse. There's something tough about him. And then after watching this race, when he duplicated that, he's like a throwback type of horse. You know, back in the old days, they don't use the expression anymore, but they would say a horse is all hickory, which means that he's tough and sound and hard running. And he's just one of those horses you just like, you like to have in your barn. And, we used to see a lot of those type of horses back in the 60s and 70s. And look, and they're probably now, but they just don't call him that anymore. But that's the way he ran. And my only concern with him was how the speed figures would come back, because he went into that race, his maiden race, he had gotten a 10 on Thoroughgraph. I said, I mean, that's not too good. I said, he's going to have to improve big time off of that. And he went from a 10.5 to a 3.25. So the 3.25, you know, puts him right there with all the best horses. So I was very impressed with him. And, you know, the Fletcher horse that finished second, he got going really late, but he came home. He's not fast, but he's improving, and I think he's going to get better as it overtook. I'm talking about, and he'll get better when the distances stretch out. But you know, he showed enough to assume that he's got a lot of promise. But you know, his numbers improved also. He went from a 9 to a 5.25, so he'll get better. So all in all, going a mile and eighth, and they have options, you know, with him now. I mean, with risk-taking. Right now, he's going to the Wood Memorial. He doesn't need, obviously, to run. There's no way in the world they're shortening him up now to one turn. So, you know, he's got several, a bunch of distance races in. He's got this hard running mile and eighth race under him. All he needs is another one. So he can wait now for the Wood Memorial. He still have plenty of bottom for the Derby. He's getting no concerns at all about the pedigree. So there's nothing really to dislike about him. I think he's a horse with a bright future, and if he improves a little bit in the wood, even a little bit off the wood, then he could be ready to peak on Derby Day.
That brings us from last weekend to this, and the Risen Star, certainly a fun cast, and Senior Buscador continues to come up this morning from me and Jay and Ed, pretty much every conversation kind of has the spotlight on him.
Yeah, well, you know, this is a good question. Listen, I've had him ranked number three since day one. So, I mean, I've always been high on him because of the fact I know it's two races with Remington Park. But when a horse comes, and a horse that comes from that far back, you always have some kind of concerns that he's pace dependent and everything. But not only does he win his race, he's 15 lengths off the pace, and he wins by six. I mean, he goes by horses so fast that he just blows by them. So you can figure there's something there. You know, if you're off, maybe I don't know, maybe what, two lengths or so off the lead at the eighth pole, and you win by six lengths. I mean, he just draws off with every stride. Now, again, he's going to be facing much, much better horses, and he comes off of Lasix. So we'll have to see what happens there. And he's only had the two starts. He hasn't run in a while, and he hasn't been training hard. You know, he had three furlong workouts and then 1 half-mile breeze last time. So it's not a lot there as far as foundation. So I don't know what kind of gallops Todd Finch has been giving him, if he's been giving him some stiff gallops and stuff, yeah, which is fine if he's giving him open gallops. But by not running in the LeCompte, he will have to do something in this race and in the Louisiana Derby, obviously, and then he's going to have 6 weeks to the Kentucky Derby. So he's going to have to build up some kind of bottom. Because the horse with his running style, you know, it's not like he has a tough race from start to finish. He only runs late. So he needs to get some bottom. Now, he certainly does not have to win this race. I mean, if he gets beat by one of the LeCompte horses, and any one of the three horses can win the race, if he's closing in the race and shows he could run with them, then if he can pick up a few points in this race and then leave everything for the Louisiana Derby. But I think the mile and eighth will help him now that they've stretched this out. And I think they stretched out this race to a mile and eighth because of the six-week gap. I think they figure, well, if the horses can have six-week gaps from Louisiana Derby to the Kentucky Derby, and horses do not come off the Louisiana Derby and win the Kentucky Derby. They haven't done it in the past. Any Derby winner that's won the Louisiana Derby has had a race afterwards. But the way the schedule is now, trainers don't want to do it. They don't want to run 3 weeks and then again another 3 weeks into the Derby. So they go the 6 weeks, and it hasn't panned out. So I think Fairground's thinking, I'm just putting myself in their head, is that, well, you know what, let's give these horses a little bit more bottom. We'll run them a mile and eighth and then a mile and eighth again. Actually longer, mile and 3/16. So to give them more, a lot more bottom, so the 6 weeks, they can use the 6 weeks instead of having it a hindrance, it could be a help. So I can understand their thinking. So I think things could change this year as far as the Fairgrounds path to the Derby. But listen, He's the fastest horse in the race. He ran a 2 3/4 in the springboard mile, so he is the fastest horse in the race. But again, class wise, he's moving up. And he had Mandalown, who I really liked. In fact, I had him ranked ahead of Midnight Bourbon and Proxy 2 weeks ago. I did move Proxy up because I learned some things about him, and he gets John Velasquez, which is he's going to move way up, and I think he's a vastly improved horse himself. So, you know, Mandalone did not draw well. We'll see what happens. His last race, he got hung really wide, you know, on the first turn and lost a lot of ground the whole race. That's why I had him on top, and that's why he got a better Thoroughgraph number. Now he's way back on the outside again, so we'll have to see what happens there, you know, especially with blinkers. And, you know, it's up in the air right now. Midnight Bourbon, I think he's going to appreciate the longer distance, and obviously so will Proxy. So I'm looking for all three of those to run big. If I'm looking for a price horse in there, a horse that really intrigues me in here is O Bezos. And that, even though he's coming off of 6 furlong and he's coming off of sprints, normally when a horse is like 3 or 4 lengths off at the eighth pole in sprint races, there's a good chance they're late closing sprinters. But if you watch his races, he's won both of his races totally in hand with his ears pricked. I mean, Jock does not touch him in the stretch, and he just never asked me. They throw a couple of crosses on him, and that's it. And just watching the horse run, he looks like a horse that wants to stretch out. And, you know, it would be great to see the Foleys back again after last year, a horse that I really like, Major Fed, who was one of my, you know, early Derby horses last year, you know, who didn't pan out. But I think this horse has got a bright future. He looks, just watching him, he just looks like a type of horse you that's easy to train, that you like to be around. He's very professional. And if he can stretch out, again, he just certainly does not have to win this race. But if he's closing, going two turns, going stretching out from six furlongs to a mile and an eighth, that's a tough task. But if he's closing in this race and it's competitive with these horses, then he's going to be a legitimate Derby horse. So we'll see. You know, some of the other horses we don't really know that much about. You know, Star in My Dreams looks like he could be. It could be any kind. But, I mean, it's an interesting race. Let's put it that way. I mean, anything can happen because you got horses that are getting good as well. You know, a horse on paper that looks like he could be interesting is Santa Cruza, but his speed ratings have been really, really slow. So he's going to have to get much faster. But, you know, we'll just see because these horses, you know, they develop. Like some of these horses I mentioned to you, they go from, you know, risk taking goes from a 10 to a 3.25. You know, it happens. You just don't know how fast these horses are improving. The horse on the outside, he's got a bad post, but that Right and Justice is an interesting horse. You got Claim from Louis Russell, and he wins two races easily. You know, won his last in an allowance race. So you know Speed ratings were halfway decent. I mean, you know, nothing. You know, he got a 7 on the on Third Graph, which is not bad. He can certainly improve off of that. Again, he's got a bad post, but if he breaks well and he's right up there on the pace, then maybe he can get into a good position. So, you can't throw horses out this time of the year. Horses pop up, you just don't know what's going to happen. And we saw what happened in the Sam Davis horses going from six furlongs to a mile and a 16th.
Well, of course, at the same time, when it comes to that, you know, the week before with Prime Factor, he was being asked in only his second start. At least Candyman Rocket had the benefit of a second start for Foundation.
Right.
So it's a bit
problem,
of a mystery.
His problem was that his problem was that he won his maiden race just too easily. You know, you see these horses win by 7, 8, 9 lengths, and if they win like cantering the length of the stretch, then you put them two turns against, you know, seasoned two-turn horses. It's a quarter pole. You can see he was shortening stride. He'll get better. I haven't given up on him. I don't know if he's going to be quite ready for the Derby. He's got a lot of improving to do, but he's still a good horse. They just threw him to the wolves. He really wasn't ready for that race, and he ran into a. To me, right now, of all the horses that have run, he's by far the best horse I've seen run so far. Our greatest honor. Who I had him. I had ranked number 2 before that race. That's how highly I thought of him coming off a maiden race. You know, and then looking at the speed figures, he wound up running a 1 in that race. So he's there. I mean, he can win. He's ready to win the Derby now. He comes back. Hmm. You know, come back one more race. Come back in the Florida Derby. He doesn't have to do much. If he improves a point or so, if he pairs up that 1, he's basically ready to win the Derby now, and he's got the pedigree, so he's the horse to beat. We'll see what happens when Essential Quality comes back. If he runs big against Jackie's Warrior next week, going a mile on the 16th, then he could very well take over the number 1 spot again from what he's done, because it shows that he made the transition from 2 to 3. But you know, right now, by postponing the race a week, then what do you do? If he's got a 3-race plan, if Brad Cox had a 3-race plan for him, now you got to come back in only 3 weeks if you want to run in the Rebel instead of 4 weeks. So, you know, a lot of trainers now they don't like doing that. So we'll see what happens after this race and how he does against Jackie's Warrior, who I expect to run a big race. A lot of things are going to be happening in the next couple of weeks. Actually, I'm kind of glad that they postponed the race because, number one, I hate races on Monday because it puts me off of a whole day. And next weekend, there was nothing.
That's true.
We got a big race next weekend. So we still got the Risen Star this weekend. And we got, so we'll see what Rombauer does in the El Camino Real Derby. He's the only horse there that really interests me because I know what he can do on the dirt. But I think that he's in there for the mile and eighth distance. So if he runs well there, then he'll get into the picture as well.
Well, and Steve, we should also, before we finish, I've got Scully coming here at 11:30. There's two maiden races. There's three other mile and we should note. Risen Star is a mile and an eighth, and don't forget that. You know that this is the second year of the change in distance, mile and 3/16 for the Louisiana Derby, but the two maiden races and that eighth race allowance, you're going to have three races where it's going to be very clear in terms of figure making, and you know you're going to go from race to race. I mean, hoping that the track is not in a wet to drying out scenario throughout the day. That would suck. But there's some potential talent in here that could jump up.
Yeah, well, DeFito, I know they've thought highly of him, and he was actually originally in the Star. So we'll see what he does. He's going to be stretching out also from 6 furlongs. And there's some very interesting horses in here that could improve. And Mike Maker's got a horse, Risk Manager, looking at Lucky, who's coming off the grass, and there's no reason with his pedigree. I know he's out of a Kitten's Joy mare, but with looking at Lucky on top, if he handles the dirt. He had, he had a bullet workout at Gulfstream on the dirt. So if he handles dirt, he's going to be interesting. You've got this Blameworthy who's stretching out from a 6 furlong maiden race. He's a son of Blame, so you've got to figure he's going to stretch out. I mean, there's several horses in here who could break out here. We just don't know right now.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Risk Manager, because he did not come up earlier with Marcus. Risk Manager, who's 6-1, Brian Hernandez Jr. gets aboard, and because it's kind of interesting. Lasix not an issue in an allowance race like this. If Risk Manager wanted to do well and then try try deeper waters and a Derby prep, it would be without Lasix. However,
he ran well without Lasix in the grass, so.
I understand. This pedigree, that dam, Katura, she happens to be a full sister to Politically Correct, who you might remember from a couple of years ago, that ultimately, won the Oklahoma Derby and had, I think, was placed in either Indiana or Ohio or maybe even in the... Can't remember if he ran in the beam spiral, but there's plenty to indicate that dirt could be to Risk Manager's liking. So a very interesting party in here by looking at Lucky.
I've noticed too, by the way, when you see these grass sires, a lot of grass sires now are producing dirt horses. Or I should say siring dirt horses, but I don't think it matters as much as it used to. As long as there's dirt in the pedigree. And looking at Lucky's old dirt, so
although he does get turf horses, he's got
so much dirt in his pedigree that he can get both. So I mean, obviously we know. Listen, this horse's first start was at a mile in his career debut, and he was very, very impressive in that race. The way he drew off in there, and he wanted like in hand, just to eased up practically, and then his next race. He ran an even race. He got beat 3 lengths, but it was fine. Coming off a maiden race, but I think this horse can make significant improvement. I mean, like I said, he had a bullet work. He worked a minute flat at Gulfstream. It was a bullet work. So we can handle the dirt at least in the mornings. So it makes it interesting. Let's put it this way: if he wins this race, and he gets a decent speed figure in here with his pedigree. We're talking potential, another potential Derby horse.
Sure. There's also, should also mention that in that sixth race, Dolder Grand, we've talked several times to Mark Cassie since last year. Mark has gotten a little frustrated with this Candy Ride colt, but a breakthrough it could be in the offing there. That's a good group, and I think it's hard when considering that they're running the Rachel Alexandra, it's hard not to reiterate that her right. daughter's son, the Curlin colt, out of Rachel's Valentina, Alejandro, comes back for his 3-year-old debut, and I will be happy to openly root for Alejandro.
Yeah. Oh, I love his name, too. I mean, it's a great name. You know, and people forget about Rachel, you know, about Rachel's daughter. I mean, she wins a grade one stake right off the bat. I mean, that's a heck of a way to start your broodmare career. But, yeah, I mean, listen, I don't mind these maiden races now. The 6 furlong maiden races, I'm not paying too much attention to it. It's a little bit late for that.
Yeah.
But if it's a mile and a 16th, yeah, if you run well enough, you can go right back into a stake. And you still got time. You got 2 more races. You go into a small stake, get a step forward, and then you get into the big 100-point preps.
Yep.
So it's not too late. I mean, it's certainly not too late to, you know, if you're breaking your maiden, going a mile and a 16th.
Well, and that race, the race that he ran behind, the horse that he got that beat him was Caddo River in that second start when he stretched out to the one-turn mile at Churchill. And Caddo River ran that corker and then came back and ran another one for his 3-year-old debut. And is a series, you know, he's obviously already got his bona fides in place. So there's a lot to like here. And Steve, let me jump because I still got to get to Welsh and to Scully. But I'm glad we got the visit in because there was too much to cover.
All righty, Steve. Have a good weekend.
Outstanding. Talk next week. Steve Haskin, everybody. Secretariat.com, and you've got the Derby Dozen to peruse, and actually it's expanded. There's no limit to what Steve can write these days. He's got the whole website. He can make it as comprehensive as he wants. James Scully is standing by, and one thing we haven't done today is recap any of the Super Bowl pushes, and James did okay, I think, right?
I did, Steve, yes. Good morning. I was on Tampa was my big bet, but I hit all my prop bets. I played the Devin White over on tackles. I think he's going to be the second best defensive player in the NFL next year behind Aaron Donald. And I was real bullish on Leonard Fournette. I touted the over in catches, which went over, but I also played over in receiving yards and rushing yards with him. So, it feels good to be really correct like that on a big game. That's typically not the case.
Well, I don't know if people saw the numbers, but the books did very well with that result. And Well, I'll mention. I mean, the conversations we had between you and Rich Eng, it pretty much, you know, when it came to the specific pushes, you guys were both right. And actually, Rich, when it came to a proposition, Rich had the greatest earliest. I mean, other than things like coin flip, Rich said the easiest drop kick of any player prop is going to be the rushing over for Pat Mahomes. And we were 6 minutes into the game, and they had he had beaten the 19.5 or whatever it was. That was like a complete drop kick.
Yeah, the first play of the game, he ran for 15 yards.
Yeah, exactly.
Like after that first, it looked like he was just going to keep killing them with those quarterback scrambles, and he certainly was scrambling a lot. Yeah. But I mean, that was their only running game with Patrick Mahomes.
a quick report, James, because we got a few things to go through. Mm-hmm. A quick Kentucky Derby report for risk-taking and Candyman Rocket.
I like the risk-taking. You know, that race, you know, it was a little bit of an odd race, the way Capo Kane just sort of stopped it with the lead in the mid-stretch. But I liked how he finished up. I just like his last two races. I just think he has a big, like, upward trajectory. At this point of the year, it's all about moving forward. That looks like a horse he can keep moving forward for Chad Brown. The other race, the Sam F. Davis with Candyman Rocket and Nova Rags running 1-2 for Bill Mott. I mean, the race just came back slow. I thought visually they looked okay. I didn't think the third-place finisher, Hidden Stash, had the best of trips, and that was a good learning experience for that horse, so maybe he can continue to improve. But, you know, basically all those horses are going to need to keep improving to be a factor in the Triple Crown races this spring.
Excellent. Well, let's turn to some thoughts, and how about New Orleans first?
Okay, yeah, for sure. You know, one thing about the Risen Star Stakes, the second of three preps down there, Kentucky Derby qualifiers, is You got a couple horses in there, Start of My Dreams, Beep Beep, and others. I just don't think they're anywhere near quick enough to be on the pace. And the one thing that hits me with this pace, this race, is the potential for a soft pace once again. I think Proxy's going to go forward from post two. I think Midnight Bourbon's going to go forward from post six. It'll be interesting to see where Santa Cruiser and Mandolin are, because they could be out there to the outside of them going into the first turn, or they could drop in right behind them. But I still think that the potential exists for them to really slow it down, and that's why I'm going to go with Proxy and Midnight Bourbon. I'm going to take Midnight Bourbon on top as my top pick, but I'm looking at those two for all multi-race bets. I really like the race by both of them in the LeCompte. I think they're going to both keep moving forward. Mandolin worries me. Senor Buscador, worry me, because I think they're both, quality horses. But I just like the pace scenario for the horses I expect to be running 1-2 in early going, Midnight Bourbon and Proxy.
Very good. All right. You want to back up through the...
Yeah, sure. The one thing I think others have made this point, but I do think Clairier and Travel Column are two of the top contenders for this year's Kentucky Oaks. I think they're potentially much faster than Super Sensational and some of the other contenders in Rachel Alexander tomorrow. My main thing is that Travel Column, as good as she looked like, driving to the win in that Goldenrod, she has found trouble for herself in both those route efforts. Didn't have a little clean start in the Alcibiades, obviously. And then even in the Goldenrod, she's running diagonally in the stretch of that race before she gets clear. I think Clairier is going to get a good ground-saving trip from her inside post. I think she's going to get first, it's going to be in position to get a, if she doesn't get stopped, she's going to get a cleaner trip than Travel Column will be outside. So I'm going Clairier, Travel Column, and then Rachel Alexander, Steve.
How much time it makes sense to spend on the turf races. I abandoned those with Marcus, given the rain in New Orleans, but your call. If you want to.
No, I'm going to skip right over those. I thought in the Mine Shaft, with Max Field, I really did like his race last time. The fact that he showed more tactical speed, he's the horse to beat. But I do think Enforceable is your best option if you're going to try to beat him, because there's the potential that this tepid colt is going to move forward big time at age four for Mark Cassey. I really like that allowance win. I thought, he showed more tactical speed in that race, and he really galloped out powerfully, after the finish line that afternoon. So I really think it's between those two horses, and, obviously Enforceable is going to be a much better price.
What else?
And race number eight, that's a race where, once again, I just don't see a lot of pace in there. And I look at number three, Blameworthy, and I know, he's exiting a wire-to-wire win at 6 furlongs. But, that was a pretty good field he beat that day. He's by Blame, Breeders' Cup Classic winner. His dam was a two-turn stakes winner in New York, Roman Chestnut. I think a mile of 16th easily within his scope, and he could get just a dream trip. Unless something unexpected happens, I don't see him catching a lot of pressure on the front end with Declan Carroll, and I like Blameworthy right back in race eight.
All right.
And then with two other real quick picks, the maiden races. In race number six, I do like Cool Rag. I like the fact that he finished. He offered a good run last time after a terrible start from post 11. I expect him to be much closer. I like Cool Rags in race number six. And I am on that Run Classic. I was very impressed. That horse is a single in the early race sequences. He, in race number four, he's going to be the favorite Run Classic. But I'll be playing like some pick fours, pick fives, and I'll be singling him in race four, Steve. He's the best run happy I saw. I've seen so far.
Yeah,
just based on that maiden race. I mean, I was just like, wow, that horse. I mean, no telling how, I put him in my scanner the second they hit the finish in that race, because that really was such a less than favorable trip, and he really finished full of run. I thought that was a really promising horse for Brett Calhoun, Run Classic.
Well, and the, the Run Happies should be getting better with maturity. I mean, the whole concept that he was going to somehow be a sire of precocious runners was kind of nuts. And I know, you know, people are you know, sort of down on you know, on the produce, but you know, this is about the time that you know, horses that you know that are going to be slower to develop, you know, they can start to step forward. So might be, you know, might be timely to, you know, give them another chance here as they get a few more starts under their belt, and or even if they're just late starters that haven't debuted yet. You know, they don't all sires all, you know, they don't all send them out running, you know, immediately as
right.
as 2 year olds. So,
yeah, I mean, look at Daredevil. He didn't have any 2 year old runners. They
That's
shipped
right.
him out of the country, and then he has a champion and an Oaks winner from his first crop at age three. So, yeah, plenty of examples of what you're saying. I'll turn to Laurel Park. I did take a look at that card. They got six stakes tomorrow, a couple graded races for sprinters. But I'll mention a couple of the three-year-old races on the undercard, starting with race number three. It's a Miracle Wood for three-year-olds at a one-turn mile. Two of the favorites in here, Kenny Had a Notion and May the Horse Be With You, I think are a little bit vulnerable on the stretch out. I did take a look at Subsidized. He has a chance for sure off of that maiden win. But I'm going with New Year's Block Party, number two in the Miracle Wood. He ran fourth to Drain the Clock, two starts back. He ran second to Nova Rags last time in the Pasco. I like the stretch out at distance. Even his lone race at Laurel Park last December, Steve, he ran third to a pretty interesting-looking colt for Money's colt, Jackson Traveler, for Steve Asmussen, who's training at Oaklawn for his three-year-old debut. So he had been at Belmont, but now he's at Oaklawn. So I like New Year's Block Party to run well here from post number two with Charlie Marquez, the jockey.
Nice. All right.
And then in the race number six is the White Country. It's a 7 furlong sprint for 3 year old fillies. Really a horse in here that I'm looking forward to seeing. Really watching her live for the first time. Street Loot. She's reeled off four straight stakes wins. And she's a Maryland bred street magician filly, but her last two wins have come over open rivals impressively in extra heat last time. But I will say this about this field. There's a lot of speed in there on paper. There's a filly in here, Linda Rice, number two, Salt Plage, making her stakes debut. I really liked her allowance win last time. I thought her maiden win was okay. But last time at Parks, I thought she made two moves, Steve. She made a move early, and she made a move and then had another gear in the stretch. Salt Plage in race number six.
Excellent.
And then, and the Barbara Fritchie, which is race seven, I don't think they'll beat the favorite in there, Hello Beautiful. But in the General George, race number eight, that race is pretty wide open, I thought. Not a lot of pace in there for a 7 furlong sprint stakes. Number three, Lepka, really, I think, comes off an encouraging effort. I think he's going to show speed from his inside post number three. And if he gets out there without Centron, he's got a chance to lead wire-to-wire in the General George.
Very good.
I'll just say this, as far as the Derby future wager, greatest honor and risk-taking, both listed at 15-1. I'll be price shopping on those horses on Sunday afternoon because there's a whole bunch of other horses that will take money. If they're double digits, I'm taking them because they could win the Florida Derby at Wood Memorial and be among the favorites on Derby Day. And the other horse I'm looking at is Roman Centurion. I'm a fan of that Empire Maker colt, ran a head second in the Lewis. Last out for Simon Callahan. He's 30-1 on the morning line. And I got a last second Friday play at Gulfstream today. Race number nine, number four, In a Hurry, comes back off a 12-month layoff for Shug McGahee. I think the four-year-old Blame Philly has plenty of upside, doesn't catch the toughest field. I like her number four in race nine today at Gulfstream.
The LSFP, the last second Friday push from James_Scully111. James, good luck this weekend. We'll talk next week.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Steve.
There's Scully, everybody, and he has a play today at Gulfstream, and perfect timing because Mike Welch is standing by. And, of course, Mike, out of last week's action that ended up off the turf, but a nice story wrapped up for Ladies Island. Wins her last start and then sells for $300,000 plus on Tuesday. Haven't talked about Great Island, who won for Chad in the Suwannee River. And, of course, you also had Democracy and Promise Keeper, another pair of Pletcher Maiden winners. Mike, good morning.
Morning, Steve.
Mike, a couple of things. Happened to be two more graded stakes this weekend, the sprint on turf and the sprint on dirt, and they're going to push out the rainbow again tomorrow.
Yeah, I was a little surprised they decided to come back and do it so quick, and I'm not sure if maybe the decision was made when they learned that, I'm not sure if it came right before or right after they found out that Oaklawn was closed for the weekend. Maybe that had something to do with the decision to try it, to get a little bit bigger audience into the pool. So, but yeah, they get a lot of money in it. People love it, you know, and it's kind of a, it's going up against the big day at the fairgrounds, but I'm sure it's going to attract a lot of attention. Probably wind up at about $6 million in there, somewhere around that, $7 million.
Well, there's a few things within it that are interesting. The turf sprint is not part of it. Leinster is going to be a very heavy favorite for Rusty Arnold. It starts in race seven with a mile turf race for three-year-olds. And the name, though, on the card ahead of the sprint, which is actually a nice, kind of a nice, interesting cast, including Mischievous Alex. But the return of Structor is notable. I haven't mentioned this yet. Structor comes back for Chad in that mile turf allowance that goes as the 10th.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting how that race is bet and how specifically people look at Structor in there. From a numbers standpoint, just pure figures, whether you go buyers or sheets, I mean, he's way slower than most of these older seasoned horses. I mean, Structor's, you know, ran three races as a two-year-old, and that was it. So his numbers are pure two-year-old numbers. So how you project those two-year numbers to fit a four-year-old, it's going to be interesting to see how this race is played. I just think people are going to think he's vulnerable. I don't think he's going to be a total single on most tickets because you got some, you know, really nice seasoned horses in here. Ever Dangerous, Grand Journey, Lamartine, I thought, for Brendan, who's had a great meet, looks like a potential player. Argentello also coming in from out of town, the well-traveled Argentello. So it's, every race he runs at a different racetrack, but his numbers are going in the right direction. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how that one pans out. You know, it looks like for most people, Mischievous Alice is going to be a single in the sprint. The problem with the sprint is we don't know who's going to wind up in there. Three of the horses in the sprint are cross-entered at Tampa and the Pelican. So the sprint could actually end up a four-horse field, and the pace scenario could be affected for sure, since one of the horses that are cross-entered is Edgemont Road, and he's one of the speeds in here. I mean, if he comes out, you could get Wind of Change really loose and easy on the lead in here. Edgemont Road, at least, is going to entertain him. So that'll be interesting, too. You know, the one thing here, Tampa, you could run on Lasix, and here you can't in these stakes races. And that could be part of the reason some of these horses are heading over that way. Imprimis also not running here Saturday. I guess the turf sprint there maybe is next weekend. He's going there instead, and I think the Lasix is the reason.
Interesting. Interesting. These storylines keep cropping up with some of the decisions.
I mean, Mischievous Alex was also nominated there for the Pelican, but, you know, is running here. But, you know, he did race early in his career with no Lasix as a two-year-old, and he did win. So I guess Saffy doesn't have an issue with that. They're basically using this race as a prep for the Carter, he told me. So he's hoping there'll be no hiccups here. He's going to be 3-5, 2-5 in this race, depending on how many wind up left against him.
And I'm glad you mentioned. I had forgotten to bring up the two little stakes. The Minaret, I think, is just a $50,000 variety for the fillies and mares, but the Pelican is $100,000.
Yeah, you know, and they drew eight for that. We got seven for ours. But again, like I said, there's three cross entries, so you know, someone's going to wind up with a short field. Chivalry and Admiral Lynch, also the other two that. Could go either way, and I really haven't talked to any of the connections to see what they were thinking, but I'm going to guess that the guys that are entered here would probably want to duck Mischievous Alex. It looks like an easier spot there, and they could run on Lasix, so we could be a four-horse field. We'll see how much, you know, I don't know how much pressure the racing office will put on these guys to stay put.
There is, you know, I mentioned that a maiden special starts the starts that rainbow push out, and it also
starts and ends.
There's two divisions. Anything, any thoughts in here? Anybody that you've seen? And obviously, the report will be up later this afternoon.
Yeah, well, you know, of the ones that haven't run in the first division, it's Golden Whim who's going to really be the big question mark. They paid $1.5 million for him. You know, breeding wise, he's a half to a multiple grade one winner. It's where am I? Oh, the Money Honey won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and won the Belmont Oaks. So the breeding obviously is there. You know, the question is, do you pay $1.5 million for a turf horse when you buy this horse? I mean, is that the reason why you paid that kind of money? Are you hoping this horse was going to turn into a dirt horse? And now he shows up in a maiden race first time on the turf, so maybe he is just strictly turf. I don't know. You know, those are the questions they ask in here. He's probably going to go off the favorite just because of the breeding and the connections. You got Irad, you got Todd. Post 10, not an easy spot. The horse to beat on paper in there is the 12, so he's got even a tougher post ever resting, coming off a pretty good debut for Safi Joseph. But, you know, a lot of question marks in here. QF75 for Christophe Cormont looks like an interesting horse coming out of Payson. You know, obviously we have no reports there. Chad Brown, first time started tour of duty by War Front, breaking on the rail. You know, the problem for horse players, you know, you hate to see these kind of races and these kind of mandatory situations. It's the same with the last race here. You got a lot of unknowns, a lot of first-time starters,
yeah.
A lot of horses that have never been on the turf that have run. So, you know, it takes a big bankroll usually to hit these things anyway. They're so kind of jumbled. But with the 12-horse field, the maiden three-year-olds on the turf, two of them, you know, there are some horses with some form, especially in the second division. You know, maybe they'll come through and win, and people can, you know, hone in on either flora form or the well-bred performing arts. But if one of those two don't win, then you're facing the same situation in the second leg too, trying to figure out who the new faces are the right ones.
Well, and that that is always the one of the difficulties. But as you mentioned, there are a couple of standouts at least to lean on.
You know, when you put these sequences together and you get to a situation like this where you got a big force out, I can understand where you want people not to hit it as the pool grows and grows and grows. But to me, on the final day, you're giving it all away anyway. Give the little guy a better shot, you know, where you don't need these huge bankrolls. But you put races like this in the sequence, you put your big fields in here, you know, tip of the hat. I mean, at least they did put the one stake in here, so, you know, guys can narrow it down to probably one and maybe two horses in that leg. But, you know, these kind of races like this, the 7th and the 12th, you know, those guys are throwing in, you know, 50, 60, 70,000, they have the edge. And maybe, and obviously a lot more. We know the syndicates are putting 200, 300, 400,000 in. They just have the edge. You know, the little guy, to sit there and try to hit it for 50 or 100, it ain't happening most of the time.
No, exactly. Exactly. Well, the weather's going to be okay down there tomorrow?
As far as I know, yeah, it looks good. Beautiful day again today. You know, we had a little bit of rain last week. It was the first rain we had in about a month, and it's been great ever since then, too. So as far as I know, tomorrow's forecast is clear also. So at least that's a big plus. You don't have to worry about the off-the-turf situations that we did face last weekend. Wasn't handled in the best way, but you know, last Saturday wasn't a good day here either.
Look for the Clocker report, everybody, and of course drf.com/clocker. And Mike, enjoy, and we'll catch up next week.
Good to speak to you as always.
I appreciate it, Mike Welch, everybody, DRF Welch. And before we go, too, one thing I didn't get to with yesterday's getting KO'd yesterday, on the contest front, you got the first chance, last chance, tomorrow on horseplayers.com. And check out the details, because there is going to be the opportunity for literally last chance for 2021 seats as well as 2022. And there's also not next week, the week after, we've got the first free contest too, opportunity. And a lot of the next week we'll get a lot of the NHC details laid out as plans start to come together and as venues get a chance to have people come back. Fun morning, Adam Koenig from Kentucky. That was great. Marcus Hirsch at DRF for Fairgrounds. Eddie D and Jay Pribman, Scully, Pat McKenna, Steve Haskin, as well, Mike Welch. Good luck, everybody. Talk to you Monday. Happy Valentine's Day.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.